In a world of Democrats,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
And Republicans,
I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
You need a voice of liberty. Look no further. You've found it. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome to the Tom Woods Show, episode 417. We haven't talked about Paul Krugman in a while, so we're overdue. And of course, joining us to do this is economist Robert Murphy, author of a recent article called Paul Krugman, Three Wrongs Don't Make a Right. And the subtitle is The Empirical Failures of Krugman's Macroeconomic Model. I'll be linking to that on the show notes page, of course, tomwoods.com/417. I guess by now you probably know all about Bob Murphy, but we're getting new listeners all the time. So I'll remind you that Bob Murphy is the author of numerous books of importance. He is the author of two books in the Politically Incorrect Guide series, as a matter of fact. The Politically Incorrect Guide to Capitalism and The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Great Depression and the New Deal. You can get one of those, the one of your choosing, for free as an audiobook through the offer available through tomwoodsaudio.com. Bob is also the author of numerous forthcoming books. We're going to get to those one at a time when they come out. He's the author of a little book called Chaos Theory. He's the author of a book called Lessons for the Young Economist, a textbook for, let's say, older junior high and younger high school students. All these resources, most of them free resources, will be linked to on the show notes page for today, tomwoods.com/417. That textbook on economics comes also with a free teacher's edition, so it's just tremendous what Bob Murphy is doing for mankind. Bob holds a PhD in economics from New York University, and he blogs at consultingbyrpm.com. Bob, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Always a pleasure.
It's always fun to talk about Paul Krugman. People enjoy that for some reason, because you can learn economics sometimes by thinking the opposite of what he thinks. So the next best thing to being right all the time is being wrong all the time, reliably wrong. Now, I suppose he's not wrong literally all the time, but in major things, he has been wrong. And in particular, in his analysis of the situation that we've faced since 2008, he has been, as you sometimes put it, running victory laps, saying that the traditional Keynesian model has come out smelling like roses, that the Keynesians have been right about everything, those are his words, whereas everybody else has been wrong about everything, those are also his words, typical subtle Paul Krugman. Now, you've written an article, which I'm going to link to on today's show notes page, tomwoods.com/417, called Paul Krugman, Three Wrongs Don't Make a Right, and the subtitle is The Empirical Failures of Krugman's Macroeconomic Model. I'd like to go through these three items and talk to you about them. And let's bear in mind that some of this stuff can be a little technical, so we want to explain it for the reasonably educated layman, but you know, let's maybe take it down a notch even from there so that everybody can understand Krugman's mistakes. So let's talk first about this zero lower bound issue and the liquidity trap. I think we've talked about that on the show before, but it was quite some time ago.
Sure. And I think just before we get into that, again, just to justify, why are we doing this? What's the point? Are we, I thought you Austrians didn't care about predictions. Is, as you mentioned, Tom, Krugman, for those who read him regularly, will know that since 2009, this constant mantra coming from him has been, hey, this isn't ideology. This isn't about my personal preferences. This is just science, folks. We had models. We made predictions. The Austerians, or even the Austrians, sometimes you would explicitly label the Austrian school, single them out. They made specific predictions about what would happen, and we won. They were totally wrong. This is science. I can't believe in this day and age that people are still listening to these clowns who got everything wrong about what would happen with the U.S. economy. Right. So he has said some version of that easily 100 times since 2009. So that was why I felt I should write this article up that we're going to discuss now.
Let me tell you that I want to actually read for the listeners the last two paragraphs of your first section. I won't read them now. They won't make any sense. But after you've gone through, I want to give them, because these are just crushing paragraphs. The one that starts, I realize some readers may think I'm nitpicking here. This is just utterly crushing and devastating. So therefore, let me read it and glory in it after you've done all the hard work of setting them up. Fair enough?
Sure thing.
All right, so go ahead.
Okay, so again, just for your listeners, there's three main sections of sort of macroeconomic issues that I'm going to be hitting Krugman and show that he made very wrong empirical predictions that were falsified by the data, you know, to use the sort of Popperian language that he would use to say why he's more scientific. So this first one is this issue of the so-called zero lower bound. So very quickly, it is true that Krugman, at least according to his public proclamations and the textbook theory that he espouses, is not always in favor of deficit spending, even if there's a recession. That strictly speaking, his new Keynesian approach says it's always better to have the Fed step in first and use monetary policy to try to address a recession, which in their view is going to be a shortfall in aggregate demand that people aren't spending enough, whether on consumption or investment. He said the first line of attack that, you know, the people in charge will do, the authorities will do, is the central bank should cut nominal interest rates, because that will, you know, lower interest rates will cause people to go spend more and invest more. Okay, so that's, and you don't need deficit spending in terms of pump priming Keynesianism. But the reason you did need it in this crisis, Krugman said, is that the Fed ran out of ammunition in terms of conventional monetary policy. They cut short-term nominal interest rates all the way down to basically zero, and we were still stuck in a really bad recession. And so that's why Krugman says we have now the case for the federal government to run a budget deficit to boost spending that way. So this zero lower bound, even though it's kind of just an interesting curiosity to perhaps other schools of thought, in the Keynesian model, it makes a huge difference, or it's a very significant thing, because that's the critical barrier showing why there was allegedly a case for fiscal stimulus, right? Because in normal times, as long as that interest rate has room to be reduced, then there's no argument for fiscal stimulus, even in terms of Paul Krugman's model.
All right. So how did things turn out in such a way that Krugman's analysis comes up short?
Okay, so after having put so much weight on this zero lower bound in the article, you know, there's quotes of him being pretty flippant with Gary Becker and other, you know, pretty big guns in the economics profession saying, I can't believe these idiots don't see that the reason we got to use fiscal policy is because of the zero lower bound, right? So he really rested his case on it. And it turned out that we saw earlier in this, and so we're in 2015 now, early in 2015, there were sustained negative nominal short-term rates across Europe. And so what that means, and it's a kind of paradoxical at first, but what was happening is people were so panicked, and it was just the inconveniences of holding large amounts of cash, that actually people were keeping their money on deposit, or they were buying bonds that had a negative nominal yield. And so that, you know, opens up the door to say, holy cow, this huge plank in Krugman's argument for fiscal stimulus just went out the window. And so what he came out with was just to say, this is the first time he acknowledged it in his blog. He said, we now know that interest rates can, in fact, go negative. Those of us who dismissed the possibility by saying that people could simply hold currency were clearly too casual about it. But how low? And then he goes on and like looks at estimates of people saying, well, how low can these negative interest rates go beyond the zero lower bound? And then he just comes back and ends that article where he says, and I am pinching myself at the realization that this seemingly whimsical and arcane discussion is turning out to have real policy significance. Okay, so this was the huge plank in his argument. It went out the window, and he's saying he's pinching himself because, hey, everyone, isn't this fun? Look at economics actually affects the real world. When, you know, you think he'd be a little bit more sober about, oh my gosh, let's do damage control here. Let's run through and see how much did my confident assertion that the zero lower bound was a barrier, what impact does that have on people? Because I've been wrong for years now on this point.
Right. I mean, you actually say it here. The foundation for the Keynesian case for fiscal stimulus rests on an assumption that interest rates can't go negative. Then they do go negative, and Krugman, and then here's your edit, you could insert an editorial comment here, instead of saying, well, gee, maybe I better retreat for a little while and think this over, is pinching himself that he gets to live in such exciting times. Now, do I have permission to read your last two paragraphs of this section?
Sure thing, Tom.
All right. I just love this. I realize some readers may think I'm nitpicking here because, thus far, it seems that maybe central banks can push interest rates only 50 basis points or so beneath the zero bound. A basis point is a 1/100th of a percent. Yet in practice, that result would still be quite significant if we are operating in the Keynesian framework. It's hard to come up with a precise estimate, but using the Taylor principle in reverse and then invoking Okun's law, a typical Keynesian might agree that the Fed pushing down rates to negative 0.5% rather than stopping at 0% would have reduced unemployment during the height of the recession by 0.5 percentage points. That might not sound like a lot, but it corresponds to about 780,000 workers. For some perspective, in February 2013, Krugman estimated that the budget sequester would cost about 700,000 jobs and classified it as a fiscal doomsday machine and one of the worst policy ideas in our nation's history. Those are his words. So if my estimate is in the right ballpark, then on his own terms, Krugman should admit that his blunder in thinking the Fed couldn't push nominal interest rates below 0% is one of the worst mistakes by an economist in U.S. history. If he believes his own model and rhetoric, Krugman should be doing a lot more than pinching himself. That's great, Bob. May you live long and prosper and write more paragraphs like those. All right, let's move on to the next thing. This is an area that I think is maybe easier for the casual student to understand, the subject of fiscal stimulus and so-called budget austerity. Talk about that.
Sure thing. And yeah, you're right. If some people were getting confused in the last section, this one's straightforward. This is easy to understand, and you can see just the silliness and shamelessness of Krugman's rhetorical moves on this particular topic. So what Krugman was arguing for years was that, hey guys, we didn't, this stimulus, the so-called Obama stimulus package that passed in early 2009, that wasn't big enough, right? So that's the reason we're still stuck in this recession or depression, as he sometimes called it, because the Republicans and so on, you know, Ron Paul scared people and all these austerians. And so the deficit was just too small. But at least it prevented, you know, a Great Depression, replay of the 30s. But now, guys, now that the recovery is here and it's very tepid, don't get me wrong, we cannot cut spending and return to austerity policies too soon, because that's the mistake they made in the 30s. That's the mistake they're making in Europe. And so if the U.S. goes along with this sequester in particular, which, again, he called a fiscal doomsday machine, then things are going to be awful. I mean, there's all kinds of quotations that I linked to of him saying that. And then in particular, what was just hilarious was, remember, the Fed now starts another round of QE right at the time when this so-called sequester is kicking in, where all these automatic spending cuts going and so forth because of the budget impasse. And so in April 2013, Krugman actually said, I'm paraphrasing here, but this is a fair representation of what he said. He said, right now in April 2013, we're getting a good test to see these two things put together with the Fed inflating while Congress is cutting spending. And sorry, guys, it's not looking too good for you, those who thought that just monetary policy could carry the day. And he's saying because the economy's turning down. So this is as of April 2013. He said it's a good test of it. Well, the economy then actually did okay in 2013, according to standard measures. And so then in January 2014, as you can imagine, all these market monitorists, guys like Scott Sumner, are running victory laps going, whoa, whoa, whoa. Back in April 2013, Krugman said it's a good test of monetary versus fiscal. And clearly we won. So woohoo, we're right. You know, it's okay if Congress cuts spending. It's not going to cause the economy to fall off a cliff. So then in January 2014, Krugman's complaining about those guys, saying, I can't believe they're saying that 2013 was a test of monetary versus fiscal policy. Clearly, there's 19 things going on in an economy, and you can never have a really controlled experiment like that. Other things offset the spending cuts, right? And so he was complaining and saying, why are they calling it a test of the two camps? When he thought he was winning a few months earlier, he said this is a good test of these two theories. So, I mean, it's just crystal clear what he did there.
So he himself says this is a good test, and then when he fails the test, he says this is a terrible test. Why would you think this is a good test? Is that a fair summary?
I mean, there's quotes and links in the article. Like, it's, I know people say, oh, come on, you guys have to be exaggerating. Like,
yeah, right. He couldn't possibly have said it this way. But if you've read Krugman for any length of time, you know that that is how he speaks.
It was exactly that blatant. Now somebody else, he was quoting somebody like Mike Konzel, I think, I don't know how to pronounce the guy's name, in April 2013. It was this other Keynesian guy who said, right now we have a good test. And Krugman linked to him and said, as Konzel says, right now is a good test of these. So, I mean, he's grabbing somebody else's test, and Krugman was endorsing it when it looked like they were winning. And then when it blew up in his face, and the Scott Sumner was running around linking to that April 2013 piece saying, hey, we won the test that he just set up for us. Then Krugman was complaining and saying, oh, come on, guys, that wasn't a good test. I can't believe you're saying that.
Yeah, that one, that's pretty hard to slither out of, I would say.
Then,
all right.
So then he does a similar thing, even perhaps more shocking, in 2014. So then, you know, 2014 ends up again. This is, and I know your listeners might be surprised by this. For a while, I was rolling my eyes at the claims that, oh, come on, this isn't austerity, it was sequester. But in terms of, you know, go look at federal spending and things like that, it is kind of flat. You know, so it zoomed way up when Obama first came in. But I understand how if you always think the government should be spending more money, you would be horrified at the so-called restraint the last few years. So it actually, it's probably better than a lot of your listeners are imagining. It's not just cuts in the rate of growth. It actually was pretty flat for a while there, especially if you include state spending, you know, look at like total government spending and not just the federal level. So anyway, while this is all happening, things that Krugman is saying, you know, is fiscal doomsday machine, this is the worst policy idea ever, blah, blah, blah. The economy, according to conventional, I mean, it's sluggish, but the recovery just keeps improving, right? The official unemployment rate keeps going up, GDP keeps going up. And yeah, there's issues with those things, but that's not the way Krugman can argue with it. He has to make fun of the shadow stats, you know, conspiracy theories and stuff. So according to Krugman's own metrics that he uses, the economy inexplicably kept getting better even when they were cutting spending or holding spending constant, which he said was going to be a disaster and cause a double dip and so on. And so by the end of 2014, you know, he really couldn't keep that up. He had to, you know, he knew I can't keep saying how the spending restraint is going to be disastrous. And so he totally flipped and he started praising the Obama recovery. And he used it as a way to mock all those conservative Republicans who gave such dire warnings about Obamacare and how that was going to ruin the economy because Obama was some crypto Marxist Muslim atheist. And I'm not exaggerating. Those are like the terms Krugman uses to show how silly the opponents of Obama are and how paranoid and nut job and, you know, contradictory they are that they simultaneously accuse him of being a Muslim and an atheist, right? So Krugman often uses that kind of phrase to label conservative Republican critics. So again, just to back up and give you the big picture, Krugman for years was warning spending cuts while we still are in a weak economy is going to lead to disaster. We got the spending cuts and restraints. He said this is a fiscal doomsday machine that we've just unleashed. He wasn't making a warning that this is the way policy might go. When the sequester went through, he said, this is a fiscal doomsday machine, right? It's in operation. Then when the economy kept getting better, he finally said, okay, this Obama recovery proves the Republican critics didn't know what they were talking about. They kept warning us about how bad the economy would be and employers wouldn't hire anybody because of Obamacare. Ha ha, you idiots. Once again, their model's totally wrong. I can't believe people are still listening to them. That is the rhetorical move he tried to take.
Let's move into the third one, because this one is the one that surprised me the most, the area of price inflation, because here is where he feels, I'm sure, that there's no way anyone can say anything against him. His position is completely unimpeachable, that he was telling everybody that there would not be appreciable price inflation, and there has not been, so therefore he was clearly right.
Right. This is my favorite one. So for those of your listeners who don't know, I don't want anyone to go Googling and then be surprised and think I withheld something. Let me disclose, I was wrong on this issue. I foolishly made a bet with my friend David R. Henderson, another free market guy. He was worried about the Fed's policies, but he thought I was being premature in my warnings. So we both had a bet, and he posted it on EconLog, and I did it on my blog, so it was public knowledge. And I said that I thought CPI was going to rise by 10% year over year, and we had, you know, some framework of like 3 years or so. I don't remember the exact details, and it didn't happen. So I paid him. I lost the bet. So Krugman and Brad DeLong and guys like that were just laughing themselves, you know, silly, saying, ha ha, these idiot Austrians worrying about hyperinflation, and they were totally wrong, and yet they keep the same model. And as you say, Tom, the way Krugman very cleverly phrased this particular aspect of the issue over the years was to say, here's a clear-cut example of models making two divergent predictions. We said price inflation would be modest because the aggregate demand is so weak and we're in a demand-side recession. We're up in the liquidity trap, whereas these conservative right-wingers were worried about hyperinflation, you know, because look at all the money the Fed's dumping in. They were wrong. We were right. Therefore, if you're a scientist or care about, you know, empiricism, you should agree with our policy conclusions. But that is a very slippery way of framing it, because actually Krugman's model did not merely predict that there wouldn't be large price inflation. Krugman, the model he was using coming into this thing, said there should be accelerating deflation. In other words, whenever there's high unemployment and there's slack in the system, prices will start dropping, or price inflation will slow down. And if you're still, even once CPI is flat, if you still have very high unemployment, idle resources, slack labor markets, and so on, it will go negative. And that's what happened actually in Japan. CPI literally fell in Japan over long stretches. And so, and Krugman predicted that for the U.S. He said, Japan, here we come, back in 2010. All right. So it's not – so yeah, it's a true statement for Krugman to say we did not predict massive price inflation, but that's very misleading and self-serving. Actually, his model, and he himself predicted that prices would plummet, and they didn't. We had modest CPI inflation, right? And we can argue about whether CPI is valid or not if they cook the numbers, but the point is it didn't do what Krugman thought it was going to do. So in the big picture, at certain points, I was worried about very rapidly rising price inflation. Krugman was worried about very rapidly falling deflation. And what happened is we got modest CPI for the period according to the official numbers. And Krugman's running around saying, oh, his model passes with flying colors. I mean, it's you really can't make it up.
I'm going to steal your text again here. In your conclusion, you say, Krugman, armed with his Keynesian model, came into the Great Recession thinking that A, nominal interest rates can't go below 0%, B, total government spending reductions in the United States amid a weak recovery would lead to a double dip, and C, persistently high unemployment would go hand in hand with accelerating price deflation. Because of these macroeconomic views, Krugman recommended aggressive federal deficit spending. As things turned out, Krugman was wrong on each of the above points. We learned, and this surprised me too, that nominal rates could go persistently negative, that the U.S. budget austerity, in quotation marks, from 2011 onward, coincided with a strengthening recovery, and that consumer prices rose modestly even as unemployment remained high. Krugman was wrong on all of these points, and yet his policy recommendations didn't budge an iota over the years. People should read your article for themselves at tomwoods.com/417. Let me say a word about the podcast that you and I had come up with called Contra Krugman, where every week we're going to go through Krugman's New York Times column and give it a critique. I had initially thought that April would be a good time to do that, and then I made an announcement on my Facebook page, facebook.com/Thomas E. Woods, in which I said, you know, I really have been balancing so many things with the, you know, the RonPaulHomeschool.com stuff and just everything. And I think I need a little bit more time before I take on a new project. And everybody is, you know, saying such wonderful things. Oh, you know, you do so much and we appreciate it. That's very sweet, and I'm grateful for that. But let's say we won't make a hard and fast announcement of the precise month, but let's just say the wheels are turning. Bob and I are working on this, and we do plan to launch this thing before long. Do you want to add anything that's as cryptic as that?
We're really looking forward to it. You guys are going to love it, and you don't want to miss a single episode of it.
All right, that's really, really good. So if you want to be the first to find out about the launch of that show, there's no show like that. There's no podcast like that for anybody, and yet Krugman needs that. And for anybody inclined to say, why are you giving Krugman all this attention? You know, he doesn't deserve it. Yeah, well, it's not because of him as a person necessarily. It's because of the ideas, which get spread like crazy. And even some, you know, people who are on our side would like to know, how do you respond to these sorts of arguments? But if you want to be the first to know about it, then text the word Liberty to 33444. And first of all, you'll get a free ebook, my book, 14 Hard Questions for Libertarians Answered, which has some material by Bob Murphy in it. And secondly, you'll be subscribed to my weekly letter. And in that letter, I will announce, before anybody else finds out about it, I'll announce exactly what the deal is with the podcast. So just text the word Liberty to 33444 and you're golden. Bob, thanks once again for being here to help us correct some errors and understand the world better.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Always fun.
All right, everybody, check out the show notes page, tomwoods.com/417. Lots of wonderful resources for you to accompany this episode, free books, all kinds of wonderful things. If you are learning from the show, if it's benefiting you, please consider supporting it as a supporting listener. You get tons of stuff, not just transcripts and discounts, but you get that, but also my courses for the Ron Paul Homeschool curriculum. You get libertyclassroom.com. You can even get a lifetime subscription to that. I'm going to have exclusive mini courses for you guys. I'm going to start doing even more of those in the future. All kinds of stuff. Plus, of course, autographed books in the mail. Please consider doing that at supportinglisteners.com. Very important lesson in economic history coming your way tomorrow, so make sure and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher over at tomwoods.com. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.
The Tom Woods Show.